And please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Becca from Phillipsburg, New Jersey.
Becca.
Hi, I'm Becca. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Becca.
Thank you so much for having me. My sobriety date is September 17th, 2010. I have a sponsor, and she is a sponsor, and I have been very fortunate to sponsor other women in the room. My home group is the River Otters. They meet on Zoom on Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday mornings at 6:30 in the morning. If you are ever looking for a 6:30 a.m. Zoom meeting, it is a really great way to start your day. That meeting kind of formed out of COVID. We originally used to meet outside at this really beautiful place called the Giving Pond. So get up and go outside and drive 30 minutes at 6 o'clock in the morning and sit with a bunch of alcoholics outside, even when it was really cold, and watch the sunrise, basically like start in the dark with headlamps. Talk about sobriety at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was the thing that definitely kept me sober through that period of time, and I'm really grateful to that group. I'm grateful that, you know, even though now we're on Zoom, it's a really strong group, and it's a great part of my sobriety. So what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and I'll say, like, it's such an honor and a privilege to talk anywhere about Alcoholics Anonymous and how it saved my life, and how I can continue to carry the message, but I remember when I first got sober coming to this meeting, and it was like such a cool meeting. It was outside, and there would be all these people here, and I can remember like specific speakers that I saw. I remember coming here when my friend Jimmy C spoke, and like when my friend Heidi, who spoke here a couple weeks ago, asked me if I'd be willing to speak at this, I was like, really? Like, that meeting is so cool, and I know that they record it, and I just like had to check myself a little bit in that, like, carrying the message even to one person is why I'm here. You know, it doesn't matter what meeting it is. It's just always an honor and a privilege to talk about how Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. So, back to what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in Phillipsburg in New Jersey, just over the river. I'm an only child. And I grew up with a very sick parent. So from the time that I was really young, my dad was a childhood diabetic. And by the time that I was in third grade, he was on permanent disability and on kidney dialysis. And we spent a lot of time in and out of hospitals. And we had a lot of chaos in our life because of that. Like, everything really revolved around his illness. And I relate a lot to people who grew up in alcoholic homes because, like, everything was about that. Like, there was a lot of just, like, unpredictability. Like, I did not know what I was going to find when I would come home after school. I have had experiences of, like, finding my dad passed out, having to call 911, of being in an ambulance, of going to the hospital in the middle of the night, of being picked up every day after school to go to the hospital for, like, months at a time. And so, like, I learned at a really young age, like, a lot of really, like, Al-Anon things, right? Like, I became really codependent at a really young age because I almost had to, like, learn how to parent to help out. And I learned that I was not going to be okay to rock the boat, right? Like, I had to do well in school and behave and, like, do all these things because, like, everything else was concentrated on that. And felt really, like, isolated and alone. I don't know if it was because of that, but I think that had a lot to do with it. That I felt different, and I didn't know any other kids that had gone through that experience. And I can remember from a really young age, like, really struggling with the concept of God. My mom made us go to church. I should mention that my mom grew up in an alcoholic home, so she has lots of codependent tendencies too, and then kind of like ended up in this situation of caring for my dad, and would always be like, everything's going to be okay, everything's fine, we're not going to talk about our feelings, we're not going to share this with anybody else. She would make us go to church on Sunday at this Catholic church, and she would make me go to CCD, and my dad refused to go. He was the youngest of eight kids, they seem to have forgotten to baptize him because he was the youngest of eight kids. Everybody else got baptized. And so he just like had this like disbelief in God, like especially because so much was going on for him and his health, and he really suffered from a lot of depression and like really struggled with that. Like I remember believing at a young age, like that's why my dad must be sick because he doesn't go to church with us, and like really struggling to like understand a God that could let this happen in my life. And really fighting at one point about having to go to the CCD classes. And, like, my dad would have to be the one to take me after school. And so eventually he got tired of fighting me, and I didn't have to go anymore. My dad died when I was 15. And I can remember, like, sitting at the hospital, and he was really sick. And we knew that he was going to die. And just, like, praying and praying for God to, like, not let that happen. And it did, and, like, just, like, feeling this, like, complete absence of God in my life at that point. And just, like, that even if there was a God, he wasn't interested in helping me, so I just, like, wasn't all that interested in, like, you know, following any of those rules anymore. And I felt like after my dad died, I didn't have to be that good girl that did everything right anymore. And when he died, you know, my mom went back to, like, everything's going to be okay, like, we're going to get through this, everything's going to be fine. A couple weeks after he died, she sent me to Florida to stay with some relatives, and while I was gone, she cleaned all his stuff out, and I came back, and we didn't talk about it anymore. Like, it was just, like, not going to be a thing. And, like, I just, like, I can remember just, like, totally shutting down. Like, this was just not going to be, like, a conversation that I was going to be able to have. I had not been taught any coping mechanisms about how to feel feelings or like be okay with them. Like I don't want any of them, right? Like just stuff them down and all right, like we're not going to cry. We're not going to talk about this. What can I do to not feel the way that I was feeling? Relationships became a big part of that. Like if I could just find somebody else that would make me feel better and like that would be great, right? Like boyfriend, friends, like whatever. And it was not all that long after that I found alcohol. And I can remember, I don't remember my first drink. And I like to say that because I hear in AA a lot, and I heard when I first got sober, people talking about this like experience of the very first time that they had alcohol and they were like 8 years old or something. And they knew from that moment, like I probably had wine coolers in somebody's basement, right? Like I don't remember that. I remember the first time that I got drunk. And I remember that my mom had started dating this guy, and it probably wouldn't have mattered who it was. I probably would have hated them no matter what, but I really hated this guy. And like, she went away for the weekend and she trusted me because I was this good girl and I was in all these honors classes that of course I wasn't going to do anything wrong. And she left me by myself and I decided I was going to have a party. And like, I was, again, not really cool. So like I had like five people at my party. But like this guy got this bottle of alcohol and like I can just remember I started to drink and I felt like I had arrived. Like I felt so cool that I had this party. I changed my outfit halfway through the meeting, like through this like party that I had. It was something I suddenly felt confident enough to wear. I wanted that feeling, right? Like euphoria, right? I didn't have to think about or feel any of those feelings that were constantly in my head of not being good enough, of feeling different, of feeling less than, of feeling not smart enough and not pretty enough and all of those other things. Like I didn't have to feel that. Like that was gone because I had this and I was convinced after that moment that it must just be this town and these people and my mother and all these things that were making me feel that way. And if I could just get away from them, that my life would be different and I could live the way that I wanted to live. And, I went away to college. I, you know, had done pretty well in high school and like I drank a couple times in high school. Like every time I had an opportunity to drink, I got drunk and I would hang out with these people that would get like a six pack for six of us. And I'd be like, why? Like, I was always the one that's like, why can't we drink more? And I was always the one that was like loud and like throwing up in the yard, and, like blaming it on somebody's dog. And like, I just like, what? Like, I didn't want one drink. Like, I wanted that feeling, right? And so I went away to college in upstate New York, and I was convinced, like, this is where I'm going to meet my people, right? Up until that point, I had told everybody my name was Rebecca. Like, that's what everybody always called me when I was growing up. I told them my name was Becca. Like, that was cooler. And I fell in with the people that drank that I wanted, the way I wanted to drink. I can remember my college roommate, she showed up with a plastic handle of vodka, and I was like, this. Like, this is what I love, right? Like, this is going to be my life now. And I just, like, took off, right? I had a fake ID. Within a couple of months, I started dabbling with other substances, which I was, like, all high and mighty before that. I was like, I'm not going to do anything else. I'm like, you were going to offer it to me, I was going to do it, right? If it was going to make me not feel the way that I was feeling, I was down for that. So I was off to the races and like, just felt so cool and felt like these were my people. And for a long time, like, it was fun. Like, I had a lot of fun when I was drinking. I didn't have a lot of consequences early on. I just felt like my weekend kept getting longer. Like, would, like, kind of start on Thursday. And then, like, it just, like, you know, Wednesday night was karaoke night. Monday night was trivia at the bar. Sunday night was Sunday night football. And even though I didn't know anything about football, it seemed like a really great reason to drink. Like, I was like, all right, I can be there for that. And, like, I didn't want to miss out on any of those things. Like, if somebody else was drinking, I was drinking. Even if it meant I had to hang out with a variety of different people, like, I was going to be there. And when I wasn't drinking, I was probably using something else because, like, I didn't like that feeling of when I would wake up in the morning and wonder. Like, I can just remember getting to that point where, like, I started to face consequences. And, like, they were relatively minor, but, like, I would lose a lot of phones. I would drop phones and beer and have to go back to the T-Mobile store, like, twice in 1 week. I can distinctly remember, like, talking to the same guy about how I broke two phones in 1 week. Losing keys, losing coats, which is not great in Albany in the winter. Waking up in places that I didn't know where I was. And just, like, thinking it was fun. Like, I can remember, like, getting back together with my roommates in the morning and trying to piece together, like, where I'd been, what we had done, and, like, somehow I had acquired a video camera during that time period, which is why I know I can never run for office. Because they, like, get back to our apartment and, like, videotape, and, like, we'd watch them the next morning, and nobody would remember what we had done, and it was, like, really funny, right? Except, like, sometimes it wasn't. Like, sometimes it was, like, really mortifying to see how terrible I was. And, like, I can just remember getting to a point where I would, like, pass out at, like, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I would come to, like, really early. Like, it'd be, like, 6, 7, 8 o'clock, and, like, the room is spinning, and I feel like shit, and, like, I can't get back to sleep, and I'm nauseous, and I'm like, what did I do, and what did I say, and, like, what are they thinking about me? Like, that's all I could think is, like, what do they think about me? And I would drunk message people on AOL Instant Messenger. And I would, that gives you an indication of my age. And, I just, like, went on like that. Like, I didn't, you know, I consider it, I don't like when people say, you know, like, oh, God was looking out for me. Like, I just, you know, I've been fortunate to experience a lot of privilege, right? I'm, like, a middle-class white girl, so I didn't get in trouble. And I know that that's probably why. And I just, like, skirted around danger, and I'm really lucky that I didn't end up in, like, more difficult and traumatic situations than I did. And so I got through college. I don't know how. I majored in political science, so it wasn't really that hard. Like, just, like, bullshit a lot. And I finished college. I'm getting to the end of college. I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do with my life? Because, like, I just wanted to keep doing this. I had no fathomable idea how I was going to get, like, a real job. Like, that, like, I can remember from a really young age, like, just thinking about, like, how terrible life was going to be if I, like, had to go to work every day and, like, work till 5 and then, like, come home and be exhausted and make dinner and do it again the next day. Like, I didn't want that, right? And, like, I was like, I just want to keep partying. And so I thought, like, I could go to grad school, but I realized, like, I'd have to actually do something to go to grad school. I took the GRE, and I did really terribly. And the next day I applied for the Peace Corps, and they let me in. So, like, 3 months after I graduated college, I was shipped off to Eastern Europe to this tiny little country called Moldova. It's between Romania and Ukraine. It is known as the wine-producing region of former Soviet Union. So it's a really great place to send an alcoholic. They used to call it, like, the most ambiguous country in the world, which just means everybody gets drunk. And, like, it's a very poor country. Like, most people, I didn't have running water or gas lines where I lived, and, like, people would start drinking at 9 a.m., and I was like, this is great. Like, I can just, like, remember, like, when we went through this training, we did language training and cultural training, and they would talk about how, like, every family makes their own house wine, and, like, I remember sitting through this class about how to, like, politely decline a drink because, like, everybody was going to offer you wine. I was like, I do not need this class. Like, I'm not offending anybody, right? Like, I'm going in. If they're going to offer me wine, I'm just going to have to drink it. And so I went to this tiny little village, and I, you know, culturally assimilated. I like, would hang out with all my neighbors because they would offer me wine. And, like, I just, like, I don't know, at first, again, it was fun, and then, like, it got really lonely, because I was in this place where, like, I barely spoke the language. I did feel like I was better at the language when I was drunk, but, like, I didn't speak the language, I didn't know anybody, like, no one spoke English, and, like, I would be by myself, but, like, eventually I was living by myself in this little apartment, and I would buy the house wine from different people. It's like $1 a bottle. It was really strong, and I would sit there and drink by myself, and I would drunk dial America and spend all my money. Like, that's, like, what I did. Like, it's, like, really sad. Like, that would be so sad that I would, like, blackout drunk by myself. I would spend all my money for the month, and I would not remember phone calls that I made. I can remember calling my grandfather drunk and not remembering it. And, like, I would feel really shitty about it, right? Like, that is just, like, but I didn't know how to do anything else. Like, I was so uncomfortable in my own skin, and, like, I just didn't want to feel that way. So I started drinking a lot by myself, and then I took a hostage, I guess we say, in the rooms. I got in a relationship with the only person in the village that spoke any English, and he became my, like, safety net for the next 2 years that I lived there, you know. He kept me out of trouble. He would pick me up when I was drunk. And I decided near the end of that, like, you know, the only way he could come back to the United States was for us to get married. And that seemed like a really good idea for me. Like, everybody's going to think it's so cool that I come back with this, like, Eastern European husband. And I'm, like, so bohemian. And we went back, applied for this fiancé visa. We got married in my living room. We had no money. I didn't have a job. And I was really convinced that, like, everybody must be missing me at the bar in the 2 years that I was gone. And it turned out that all my friends got real jobs, and, like, they didn't drink on Tuesday anymore. And so, like, I just, like, went back to, like, drinking by myself. Like, I would drink a lot of boxed wine in my living room by myself in front of a computer, drunk messaging people. And, like, and even when I would go out, like, I would try to go out and, like, meet these friends for, like, happy hour, and, like, I would think that I was just going to happy hour, and I would, like, close down a bar. Like, I pick up a drink and that allergy happens, right? Like, I cannot stop the switch that goes off in my brain when I pick up a drink, because all I want is more. Like, this feels good, and, like, what I'm day to day doesn't feel good, so, like, I just want to keep drinking. I cannot stop it, even though I would tell myself time and time again that this time would be different and I wasn't going to get blackout drunk. I would usually would. So, you know, we came back in December of 2009, and I entered the rooms in September of 2010. So my downfall was really quick. I was drinking a lot. I did not drink every day, but every time I drank, I got drunk. And every time I drank, I would lie. And I would, you know, not do the things that I said that I was going to do. And I could not follow through on any commitments. And I had this part-time job and this husband that was gradually learning how to hate me. And you know, one night that was just like any other night when I went to happy hour and said that I was going to be back after dinner. I closed down a bar again. And I came home throwing up and, like, super drunk, and somebody else had to drive me home, and I can remember waking up the next morning, and I was so hungover, and I just felt like shit, and, like, this husband that I had that was like, I'm done, like, I didn't come here for this, like, And all I could think of was like, what is everybody gonna think if he like leaves me, right? Like, especially if it's because of my drinking. And I like begged. Like I just was like, I'm never gonna drink again. I promise I'm never gonna drink again. Like, don't leave. And he like leaves for work and I'm sitting there and I'm so hungover and I'm like, I don't know how to not drink today. Cause it's Friday. It's like a great day to drink. I mean, they were all great days, but like Friday especially, like I don't have anything going on tomorrow. Like, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, how do I not drink today? And I'm like Googling, like, how do I not drink? I stumbled upon this number that I thought was AA. Like, I knew what AA was. I had some relatives that were in the program that I mostly avoided. Because, like, I don't want anything to do with anybody that was going to call me out on my drinking. I was aware of it. I called this number that I thought was AA. It was, like, how to stop drinking. And it ended up being some kind of rehab. And they told me that if I didn't go to rehab, I was going to die. And I told them that I guess that I'm going to die because I'm not going to rehab. Like, I was, like, determined. Because, again, like, what is everybody going to think if I go to rehab? So I did some more Googling and I did find the number for the AA hotline in New Jersey and I called them and they had this really lovely woman call me back, and she talked to me on the phone for a while and I can't remember her name or anything that she said except that, you know, I related to her and she convinced me to go to this meeting in Bloomsbury, New Jersey, and it was like 7 o'clock at night and she told me if I went there then that somebody would be making coffee. And, I don't know how, like that's a God moment, right? Like I don't know how I got to that meeting. But I know I walked into the room and I sat in the back and I was convinced that nobody was going to notice me or just like look like I fit in. And this guy walks over and he's like, are you new here? And I just started crying. Like I was like a mess in this flock of women surrounded me and they, you know, told me I was going to be okay. And they told me, very fortunately, I had gone to a meeting that like split off into a beginner's meeting. It was a very big meeting, Bloomsbury. It's still pretty big. And they split into a beginner's meeting. And that I could go in the back with the other beginners and they would talk to me about the first three steps. And I remember being back there and I told them that I was not an alcoholic. I was a binge drinker just because every time I drank, I got drunk and I just didn't want to do that anymore. They were like, okay, keep coming. And I remember hearing this guy share in that meeting and he was maybe like 10 years older than me. I thought he was attractive, so I think that's why I listened. But he like talked about how he had been like trying to get sober and he'd been sober for a little while and one day he went out for a pack of cigarettes and somehow he picked up a drink and he didn't come home for 3 days. And now, you know, he was losing his house and he was facing bankruptcy and like his family wouldn't talk to him and I'm just like staring at this guy like that's what's gonna happen, right? Like I was 25 years old and I did not have a lot of consequences and I looked at that guy and I knew that's exactly where I was gonna be. And I figured, like, I guess I'm just gonna see what these people are talking about, you know, and I went to more meetings, and I did not go to a meeting every day. I went to a lot of meetings, like, I know the next meeting I went to was on Sunday, because this really nice lady told me to go there. And I would go to different meetings, and eventually that same nice lady, I had asked her to be my sponsor, and I learned after I asked her that I had gone to high school with her daughter and that she worked in a church. And if I had known either of those things, I would not have asked her. So it was good that I was really just listening to what she shared in the room and that she was really kind to me. And it looked like, she had what I wanted because she was comfortable. She was happy. She would hug people at the meeting. I wanted that, right? I wanted to be able to smile when I walked in and not feel like I was clenching my teeth the entire time. I can remember leaving the meeting and getting to my car and like physically feeling myself unclench because how uncomfortable I was to be there. And I felt uncomfortable all the time. And I had this sponsor now and we started to go through the steps and I started to learn about what alcoholism was. Like not only was it that every time I picked up a drink, I have an allergy to alcohol and I will continue to drink, right? I do not have an ability. I'm completely powerless when I put alcohol into my body. But also that like horrible feeling that I felt all the time that I was trying to shove inside and pour alcohol and drugs and men and food and any other thing that I could do to not feel the way that I was feeling, you know, was an absence of a power greater than myself, and that I needed to figure out how to get to that. And I don't really love that, because as I said, like, I felt like God abandoned me a long time ago. And I love that concept of, like, the thought that my higher power could be something that was personal to me. I'm a really systematic person, like, really organized and planned, and I am very much the actor in the big book that thinks that they can direct the entire play. And so, like, I, like, needed a plan for how I was going to track down and figure out what that higher power was for me. And I convinced my sponsor, she was very, very open and willing to do this with me, to go to this class called Building Your Own Theology. This is not AA, not AA approved, right? I've been dabbling in this Unitarian Universalist church since college. I would, like, show up in college at the, like, interfaith ministry, because they would have churches come in and make home-cooked meals, and that was, like, a good appeal to me. And I can remember just, like, sitting in there, and then you would have to listen to them talk about whatever their church was. And I was, like, really, like, intrigued by these other kids that, like, believed that and that weren't drunk all the time. Like, I would show up there on Tuesdays and, like, really just be intrigued and, like, wish that I could be that dumb that I would believe that, right? Like, I'm like, oh, all right, like, I guess they've got something. And I would go to that UU church sometimes, and I liked them because they were kind of open to your own path to whatever higher power was. So I took this class when I got sober with my sponsor. She agreed that was how I could do my second and third step, as long as I kept also working on it through the book. And I explored, like, what a higher power looked like for me, and I had to read all these different, like, religions and different things. And this one story that stuck with me, which is still just, like, such, like, a way that I describe my higher power, and I described this to a sponsee, actually, really recently. They had this story in that book about how there's this little boy who goes out with a bunch of friends one day, and, you know, they all come across, like, a little animal in the road, a frog or something, and all the little boys are like, let's hit this frog, and the boy's like, He's telling his mom later, like, this voice came up, like, this voice in my head was like, don't do that, like, that's not the right thing to do. And his mom explains to him that, like, that still small voice is, like, your conscience, right? Like, that's, like, the voice that you should listen to that's inside you. And the more that you can listen to that voice, the louder it'll get. And the more that you choose to not listen to that voice, the softer it'll get until you can't hear it at all. And that was, like, such a great definition for me of what my higher power was, because I know that I have that still small voice, right? I know that I have that feeling of God that I think is within all of us, that tells me what to do in the next right thing if I can quiet myself enough to tune into that. And I poured drugs and alcohol on top of that voice for a really long time that it became almost impossible to hear, right? I didn't give a shit about anybody or anything. And so could I just, like, stay and listen to that voice? And that was enough, right? That was enough to turn my will and my life over to, like, there's something there. And I would start to experience these, like, God moments. And they were, like, little things, right? The spiritual experience of the educational variety, which I also had a great conversation with a sponsee about the other night. These little things would happen that would be, like, a really good reminder that there was something else out there that was there to help me. I can remember really wanting to drink a couple of months in, and I was convinced that I had a terrible day. I tried to call my sponsor at one point. She didn't call me back. My sponsor refused to get a cell phone. I would have to call her house phone. It sucked. She didn't call me back. And I'm, like, sitting there. I'm like, I'm going to go get drunk. And I could not stop crying. And I was going to tell the person at the liquor store that my dog died, because that's why I couldn't stop crying, is if the guy in the liquor store would give a shit. And I'm, like, getting ready to go. And she calls me back. And like I could just like remember like visibly feeling like calming down and like being able to talk to her. And I was like, I feel like that was God. Like that was God answering my prayer. Like I really didn't want to drink, right? There was like some percentage of me that didn't want to drink. 5 months into my sobriety, that marriage ended. I mean, it was not good. So, and I was in a place at that point where like I knew I'd come into sobriety to save it. And I stayed in sobriety for me. And I like started to like turn into like building a network around myself. Like I sat there and like he told me it was over and I was so devastated. And I remember texting women in the program and saying, hey, are you busy? Like I couldn't like call anybody. I couldn't be like, oh my God, my whole life is blowing up. I was like, hey, are you busy? And like this woman, who's actually my sponsor today, had responded to me, and I went to her house and cried on her couch for several hours. And like somehow like that, like I just started to like say yes to AA, started to say yes to like going out after the meeting and to hanging out with people. And I like built this fellowship around me. It was amazing. Like I'm starting to experience this God thing. I'm starting to let other people in. I was 25 years old and I grew up in AA, and I had this group of young people that got sober with me, thank God. And we would go to the diner, and we would go bowling, and we would have game night, and like I learned how to have fun and sobriety, and it was amazing. Went to the young people's dance, which is super awkward but super fun. Emily came with me to that. I will put a plug in if you do not know the Pepsi Paws this weekend in Bucks County, Langhorne, PA. I think you can still register. It's $25. I'm going, Friday and Saturday, at least one of those nights. And that, like, how you find in sobriety, like, oh my God, I did not think that was going to be possible. And, I started to do the work too. Like, I was amazed that I, like, started to hang out with these people that were having fun in sobriety and that were also doing the work. Like, we all had sponsors. We had this clubhouse that was in Easton called Courage Change. At some point, they let me be on the board of that. I don't know why. They, like, let me be on the board of this. And we would, like, we created a young people's meeting there. And it was my favorite meeting. It was, like, all my friends and anybody that came in became my friend. And we would hang out there a lot. Just, like, hang out because, like, I had a part-time job. I made $12 an hour. I lived with my mom. And I was, like... hanging out at the AA clubhouse, like day by day, I just like learned how to do things sober. Somehow, for some reason, a couple months sober, I applied to grad school. I don't know who advised me on this. I'm pretty sure they suggested that I didn't, and I did it anyway. And I was a year sober when I went to grad school. I applied to a bunch of different schools. I wanted to study fundraising. That's what I was working with, and I got into Columbia University, which was like, how? Like, I don't know, like, how that happened, right? I didn't know how I was going to pay for it, and, like, they just told me to, like, trust in a power greater than myself, and I was going to be able to figure it out, and I just, like, went, you know? Like, I just continually trusted that there was a power greater than myself that was going to get me through whatever came next, and I would just keep doing the next right thing and talking to my sponsor, and we did a fourth step. And I was able to look at all these resentments and all these other people that I had in my life that I was, like, blaming everything else on. I talked about my mother in AA for, like, the first 2 years. Like, everything was her fault. She can still really trigger me. Like, I can still, I'm, like, 12 years sober. She still, like, knows how to push my buttons. But I also have gotten to a place where I understand that my mother did the best that she could with what she had, and I wish she would go to Al-Anon. She went to one meeting when I was first sober, and she told me those people were really nice. And I was like, okay, what did they say? And she said, they told me I don't have to tell you. So, that's good. I mean, like, she didn't go to any more meetings after that, but... yeah, so I learned, like, that I was in control of my own actions, right? God was in charge of the outcome, but I was in charge of my own actions. And I didn't have to blame anybody else. I can remember so many, you know, looking at those defects of character and the things that I did, not just like the lying, but like the way that I used people and the way that I just, didn't they know that if they just did this thing that it would be better for them and for me? Like, starting to like learn to like stick to my side of the street and like the amends process was such a gift, right? Like, my mom, you know, I had a lot of fights with that guy that my mom was dating when I was in high school, and they did eventually break up, but I got to go back and talk to that person, that man that like I despised. And I can just remember having this conversation with him at Panera and like really just like being able to like make that amends and like go through what I had done wrong and like ask if there was anything else that I could do, and being able to leave that meeting with like the freeness and like never having to see him again. Like, I don't even have to think about him, right? Like, I just like was freed of that. And I had several experiences like that, and somewhat better than others, but like, husband that I, you know, separated, divorced from, you know, he refused to hear my amends. He's like, I'm not interested in hearing from you. And I was really pissed off about that. But like, later he came back to me because he needed, like, he ended up joining the military and needed some kind of like reference, and I agreed to do it. You know, like that was the amends that I could do for him. That was the amends that he was going to agree to. And I, part of my first instinct was like, screw this guy, I'm not going to do that. And then I was like, okay, it's what God wants me to do. I'm going to do the next right thing. And I also, you know, I haven't talked to or seen that guy in years, and I don't have to think about it anymore. So yeah, I went through the steps. I was able to sponsor other women, and sponsorship has been a great gift of my sobriety. A lot of my sponsees drank. And I stayed sober. So, and like every time like they would drink, it would feel like a kick to the stomach. It still does when that happens. But I can tell you that when you start taking somebody through the steps and you see the light come on, and they start to understand a higher power in their life, like that is such an amazing gift. And like every time that I like sit down and read the big book or talk about what it's like, what happened and what it's like now, and to help try to put that hand of one alcoholic into the hand of God and to let go of the outcome of it, like it helps me, right? I don't have to worry about anything else. Like I get out of my own shit. And I can worry about this person and like be present for them. And it doesn't work for everybody. You know, other people, I had a great experience of this woman that I tried to work with for a while. And she kept drinking and doing a bunch of other stuff. And eventually I was like, I can't sponsor you anymore. And she got sober, not about like after that. She got sober with somebody else. And recently she made amends to me, and I was like floored, like, whoa, like, she was like, I recognize, like, how much you tried to help me, and I just wasn't ready, and what a gift for that, you know, so, yeah, sponsorship has been great, and I, you know, I've gone through periods where I haven't sponsored a lot of women. I said a year into sobriety, I got into grad school, I was commuting back and forth into the city and working my part-time job, and then it 2 years sober, I moved into New York. I had started a new relationship. I met somebody else that was also in a 12-step program. He had 3 years clean, and I had a year sober. I did skirt around the whole, like, not dating for a year because it was, like, 5 months sober when I separated from this husband. And then I figured, like, well, now I have a year I can date. Like, so I found this guy. We went on this online date. He told me he's also clean, and he was in N.A., and I remember sharing with him, we went to this restaurant, and I was like, I made amends to somebody at this restaurant not long ago, and him saying, I'm not on that stuff yet. I married him. So, fast forward, we are currently getting divorced, so Yeah, but I will say, like, it was really great to be in a relationship with somebody else that was clean and sober. And there were a lot of really great things that happened. We moved to New York together. I got a full-time job. I'm in grad school, and I still found a way to get to meetings, right? And I couldn't get to a lot of them, and I was miserable a lot when I was there. But I had this home group, and I had a sponsor, and a service commitment. I was like, I could do this, right? And I would try to work the steps. I actually had a couple sponsees when I was in the city too, and I don't know how I did it. I think it's just like two things, you know, when you want something done, ask a busy person. Cause it just like happens, they've managed to fit it in. And also when you put AA first, everything else falls into place. And I would constantly just be like, alright, like I gotta worry about AA first. I got engaged. Right after I finished grad school, we decided we were gonna, you know, we thought we were gonna live in the city forever, and we were there like 2.5 years. We decided to move back because our support network was here, and even though I got into meetings and had a great experience with AA in New York, I knew that like the support system I had built and our families were back here, so we moved back, to Phillipsburg. I bought the house that I grew up in, and, we started to build a life together, and I did the same thing when I came back. Like, I got a home group, and I got a sponsor, and I tried to be of service. And when I was, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, we got married, and like a year later, I got pregnant. I found out I was pregnant on my sobriety date. It was such a gift, because like, I tried for many months to get pregnant, and I thought it wasn't going to work out for me, and it was like a really big testament of just being like, all right, I'm going to trust that God has a plan for me. I found out on my sobriety date that I was pregnant, and I was, like, so excited. And that year, every year, Bloomsbury was my home group for a long time, and they have a gratitude breakfast on Thanksgiving morning. So if you ever need a plan for Thanksgiving morning, it's an amazing meeting, a lot of food, and a great way to start your Thanksgiving, especially if you have to deal with family after. And so, like, I was so honored that they asked me to be the speaker that year, and I went there. And I was able to share with my home group that I was pregnant. And it was like still gives me goosebumps, right? Like I'm crying, like several people in the meeting are crying. Like these are my family, right? I was more excited to tell them than my own family. And at that point I knew, like I've been sober a couple of years and I would watch these people in AA that like they'd get all their shit back, right? Like life would start to happen. Things would be really good, and they would stop going to meetings, and, like, some of them would drink, some of them wouldn't drink, but they still look pretty miserable, and I don't want that. And so I was like, how do I keep myself here? And so I decided that I was going to sign up to be the GSR. I knew that I was going to be able to commit to, like, going to that GSR meeting once a month and going to my home group business meeting once a month, and I felt like it was too much to try and commit to coffee or anything else. I didn't know how life was going to be when I had this baby. I also had a resentment against the current GSR. I feel like he was not doing a good job. So I was like, I'm going to do this. I don't care. I'm pregnant. I'm still going to sign up to be the GSR. And it, like, saved me. Like, it saved my life, right? Like, sometimes our defects put us in the places that we need to be, right? Like, our resentments and defects, at least if I've got some inkling of a higher power in my life, I ended up exactly where I needed to be. And that was such a gift to me. I met people in service in GSR that are on fire for AA. To be able to go to conferences and to learn about like the service of AA, learn about how people who had come before me had done things that I didn't even know existed. Like the AA hotline is like run by volunteers. And to like have that experience of being able to work on the AA hotline and answer the phone for alcoholics is like transformational. It's so cool to like also a little infuriating sometimes if you're talking to like a really drunk person that calls you at 3 a.m. and you need to talk to them. But like just like I called the AA hotline. And I also had this experience really early in sobriety where like, you know, I was just testing it out. So I was not going to buy that big book for $12. I was going to take it out of the library and I was going to read it and figure it out. And like somebody in AA put that book in the library, you know, like that's one of the many things that we do. And like that service of like reaching out to rehabs and going into jails and like, being able, like, the things that people do that, like, get us here that we don't even realize, like, that service, right? People think service sometimes is, like, making coffee and opening the meeting and chairing the meeting, but like there's so many opportunities for service and I learned so many things. And I got pregnant again 19 months later, like a year and a half later. And I decided again, like that mantra of like the longer that I drank, the more I needed to drink to get drunk, and the longer I stayed sober, the more I need to do to like continue to maintain that sobriety and that serenity that I had in my life. So I signed up to be the district secretary. I learned a lot of patience in GSR. We've got big egos and we like to share them in like business meetings, but even about like totally trivial things like who's going to make the coffee and who's going to share the picnic. And like, I learned a lot in there. And like, just a lot about like how AA worked as a whole. And it kept me sober for those years. Like I had tiny little babies and like, I would get to these, commitments, and it kept me in AA and connected to people. And I learned so, I met so many people like throughout the district, and I feel like I can go to meetings in a pretty wide space of people, like in most of Northern New Jersey and throughout the Lehigh Valley, and there's probably going to be somebody I know. And so, you know, that was a really great gift. In 2019, my husband relapsed, and, it was like September of 2019. And I'd just gotten back from this trip, and I came to, like came out this like whole thing that like my husband had been using heroin for like basically the whole summer. And like I just like didn't even know. Like I was working full time and I had two little babies and I had never seen him use before, and like, you know, he had a job and like he was generally there. He was just, I remember having several conversations with him about like, why are you tired all the time? And like, why are you act so sporadic? And like, maybe you're bipolar and like, you should see a therapist. And like, why do you fall asleep when we're talking? Like, and I just like didn't know, you know, and like came out that he had been using, like heroin had always been his drug of choice. And like, he had spent that whole summer using, and like this whole conversation. And the first thing that I did when I walked away from him is to call my sponsor and to call my support network. And I got to a meeting the next day, and they like came over and surrounded me, and the only thing that I could do was like to do the next right thing and to put the work back into my own program, right? I could not get him clean. He had to do that for himself, and I needed to stay out of it. And I was so blessed to find Al-Anon at that point. I went to Al-Anon for a while, and I'm so glad that exists, right? Like that's there for the people that alcoholics and addicts, the people that we go out there and hurt, you know? And so I fit that into my program of like going to these Al-Anon meetings and going to my AA meetings and continuing to try to do the next right thing. And he stayed sober for a while and we tried to work it out, and then COVID happened, and that was like a super stressful time. And then 2021, he relapsed again, and I spotted it right away. The first time he used, I knew. And I like didn't know if I could stay in that relationship, and I got me into therapy. We have been in counseling this whole time. We were in couples therapy. I decided finally, I was like 11 years sober, I was finally gonna lower my ego enough to go into therapy. I highly advocate for outside help if you need it. And then in November he relapsed for the third time. He thought he could do marijuana maintenance, and I found that out. And that time, you know, I took time and I prayed a lot, and I talked to people in my network. And several months after that, like I made the decision that I was not going to be able to be in that marriage anymore. February, I ended that. And the gift of sobriety is that like I'm okay, you know, like it's uncomfortable, but like, you know, he's clean today. And he is willing to take drug tests when he has our children. I'm willing to have it in the custody agreement. I can ask for drug tests whenever I want, and he has agreed to them every time I've asked. And we've gone through mediation. And that's like because like I, you know, I'm sober, and like hopefully he stays sober too. But like I have empathy for this person. I've experienced a lot of anger and sadness, and like I'm really working on like feeling my feelings and realizing that I'll survive through them, right? But that God is going to take care of me no matter what, and AA is going to take care of me no matter what, and all I have to do is do the next right thing and show up and ask how I can be of service. The things that I'm working on today are trying to be still, because, again, organizer, planner, thinking I can fix everything, thinking I could save everyone, like, I've gone through, like, these different iterations of my sobriety where I've gotten on the soapbox for service, and that has been really helpful to me, and I went to Al-Anon for a while, and that was really helpful to me, and I've sponsored a bunch of women, and that's also very helpful to me, and I've got a great fellowship, like, all of those things. And right now, what I need to do is to get in touch with my higher power and to learn how to be still and experiencing that. And I knew that I was going to speak here tonight, and, like, I tried really hard to, like, spend a few minutes, like, for some reason, that's like the hardest part of my day, right? I'm like managing these jobs and these kids and all these other things. And sometimes I carry this like daily meditation book around with me and a journal. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get to this. I'm going to get to this. Like, I know you're there, God. I feel you. You're there. And I'll get to you in a minute. And I'll carry it around for hours. And like, I can't spend the like 30 seconds to like open up this book and like thank God for my day, right? And I was able to do that this morning and just like to sit there and to listen to the birds and to remember that God has me no matter what, right? And to realize that I don't have to do something to deserve that or to feel that. Like I constantly feel like, oh, let me write down what this feeling is and let me process through this and let me do more step work and let me reach out to another alcoholic. And that's all great and that's good and those are good things that AA has taught me to do. But sometimes, really all the time, I need to sit and experience the God of my understanding. Because I can take that in. I need to take that in first, and I need to care for myself before I can take care of anybody else. I need to have that own understanding and that daily spiritual connection before I can pass that on to others. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. Again, so grateful to AA and the experience, and like, I was not intimidated about speaking for an hour because, like, I feel like, you know, so often when you qualify in a meeting, you have, like, 15 minutes and you kind of, like, tell your drunk log and then, like, I came in and I got sober and it was really great and, like, my life is great today. And, like, getting to share that experience of, like, how much has happened to me in, like, the 12-plus years that I've been sober and the evolutions and the continually peeling of the onion, like, I still have a lot of defects. And I can remember when I first got sober, people would like have like 10, 20, 30 years and they're talking about shit they're still working on. I was pissed off. I was like, why? Why haven't you figured this out yet? Like, I'm supposed to like arrive and like get to this point where like everything is great. I'm like, things are good, you know? Like, I generally on a daily basis feel pretty comfortable in my own skin. And I know that I have God in my life no matter what. And I still, you know, could find other things that take me out of that, you know? I could still, you know, fixate on other things and find other things to not feel the way that I'm feeling. And that's why I have to keep coming to meetings. And that's why I keep going. You know, I try to get to a lot of meetings right now. One of the benefits of, like, sharing custody is I have a lot more time to go to meetings. Like, that's what I do when my kids are with my husband. I go to meetings. I go to, like, meetings for, like, a whole weekend. So I'm just so grateful to be here, and I'm so glad that I was asked, and I hope that I brought you a typical AA meeting. Thanks for letting me share.